everybody. Welcome to TYT Network, TYT, the Young Turks, Anna, Kim Horcher, and Ben Mankiewicz with you. All right, you guys ready to do some news?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do some news.
How are you liking this transition from hour one to hour two, Ben?
I like it. I love Michael, I love John. This is better for me.
Yeah, you get to join the ladies. We're about to have some, important discussions. All right, we have updates for you. We have a light story later on regarding how universities are now kind of pivoting toward education focused on succeeding in social media.
Education in sarcastic quotes.
Yeah, exactly. So you don't want to miss that story. But again, I want to make sure I encourage you guys to use the hashtag TYTLive to tweet to us, and we will read your tweets during the breaks and of course respond to them when we come back. All right, let's get started. Police have just released dash cam footage of the shooting involving Philando Castile. Now, of course, Philando Castile was the man who was shot and killed by Geronimo Yanez. And he was the individual who told Yanez that he had a licensed gun in the car, and then that led to a shooting. And of course, the police officer that was involved in this shooting was basically found not guilty by a jury. And so it's been a big story, but one thing that we've never seen is that dash cam footage. What really happened? It seemed to be a little bit of he said, she said in this situation, or he said in this situation. But with the video, we now have a clear idea of how the shooting went down. I want to just warn you guys that it is difficult to watch, it is graphic. But with that said, I think it's important for you to see, everything that's out there regarding this case and then make your own decision as to what you think. Take a look.
You have a license and insurance?
I have to tell you, I do have a firearm on me.
Don't reach for it then. Don't pull it out. Don't pull it out.
Okay, so here's what the video clarified for me. I was under the assumption that, and based on how this story was reported multiple times, that he was asked for his ID, and that was when he was reaching for his ID and he got shot then. But he had actually given the documentation to the cop before this happened, before the shooting happened. So he gives the documentation to the cop and then calmly says, which you could see in that video, I have to let you know, I have a licensed gun in the car. And he says, okay, well, don't reach for it. And I'm not sure if you guys heard it, but at that point, Philando Castile says something along the lines of, I'm not reaching for it. And then immediately the shooting happens. So you don't see what's happening in the car, obviously, but I just want to clarify everything so people know the context of the situation.
My understanding from reading about the trial was that, and you see there the handing over, is that he handed over the proof of insurance.
Yes, he did.
He handed over the proof of insurance and had not yet handed over ID.
Oh, I see.
But he'd already handed over proof of insurance. And I'm not, cops, it's a dangerous job, but I mean, they'd already begun the peaceful exchange of information when you get pulled over by a cop. He had handed over his proof of insurance.
Right.
And then I think had to reach for his ID when he thought, I'm gonna tell you that there's a gun in the car. And the bottom line is the same thing it was when the verdict came out on Thursday. He did everything you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you hear about black mothers and black fathers telling their kids how to behave, Ida Rodriguez says it to her, so she's scared every time he goes out. I'm pointing to you, Kim, because she was sitting in that seat on Friday. That she's scared every time, and gives very careful instructions of what to do with a police, the wife of Amadou Diallo in New York, always saying what to do when the police come. So he did everything right, and then thought I'd mention, hey, I have the funny. It's not nothing funny about it. If Philando Castile had never said he had a gun in the car, mm-hmm. and had just gotten his ID out, he might well still be alive today. But he thought that was the right thing to do because maybe the ID was where the gun was.
Yeah.
However, it comes out, he did exactly what he was supposed to do, everything that he was supposed to do, and he still ended up getting killed.
Why is that the first move to just like start shooting? Isn't there another method you could have used?
Well,
isn't there one of literally several other methods you could have used?
Right. I mean, so that is, you know, a common theme that we see with a lot of these stories where cops seem to have, you know, non-lethal weapons at their disposal, and for some reason they don't immediately go to those weapons. They immediately go to guns, which is interesting because, again, and I've said this multiple times before, in the past the big story was that cops are overusing tasers, and they were using it on individuals who had heart conditions, and even though it's considered non-lethal, in some rare cases, people did die because of the tasers. And that was the big story. That was the police brutality story that made headlines, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. And now maybe it's because of the transparency that we have with all these cell phone videos and, you know, live social media videos. We have an understanding of how often lethal weapons are used. And it just all happened too quickly, right? Yeah. So he calmly tells the cop, I have to tell you, I have a licensed gun in the car. And again, we didn't show you the full video just because we don't have time to show you the full video. But you should watch the full video because their interaction prior to the shooting was calm.
Totally calm.
Totally calm, totally fine.
So you know, quickly, almost out of nowhere.
Well, you know, and it's because, look, it's because the cop thought, one of the reasons for the escalation is the cop pulled him over because he thought he looked like a suspect. In a robbery or a string of robberies, or a, I don't know the string of robberies, but a robbery that had happened nearby. I still want to see a side by side of if they ever caught that guy, because I bet he doesn't look like Philando Castile. But he was black and he was young and he was in a car. How you reconcile that the robber you wanted was with a woman and small child who you tragically saw get out of the other car.
Go the other side of the car.
The other officer who ran away from the bullets came back to get the kid. I'm not saying you shouldn't run away from the bullets. But again, it's a slight evidence of what humans do when they're shooting. They run away. So, you know, I'm not black, so I don't have standing here, but I am a human, and I did see, you know, you see the reaction of the cop. The cop started to cry in the middle of that.
Right.
And that cop didn't want to shoot him, right? He did not want to shoot him. And that guy obviously didn't want to get shot. Nobody wanted that to happen. So the conviction, which I understand means a lot to a lot of people, and understandably, I understand why he wasn't convicted. I love that the prosecutor took the case and made the case that no reasonable person under those circumstances would have discharged their weapon. That's what the prosecution maintained. The defense, it's not that hard to defend a cop who uses his weapon and says that they feared for their life. It's because the law is written in such a way that it's a pretty easy defense. That cop feared for his life. The problem is, how do we change that cop feared for his life?
Right.
How do we make it so that interaction, the reason I can't go in with a taser is because they thought he's pulling over a robbery suspect, and you don't go in with a taser. But how do we change those interactions so that he's not terrified going in, and so that he's not so quick? And if you change the law, if it becomes easier to convict police officers, some cops are going to quit. They're going to leave the force. They're going to think this job is too dangerous for me to have my hands tied. And I understand that, right? But if we're going to give people guns in the name of the state and allow them to use them, we have got to have incredibly tight controls over the use of those weapons. To me, leaving out law, leaving out just instinctive human reaction, I think that guy lost his head too quickly. No question.
Yeah.
No question. A lot of other ways to go there. But he lost it, and it's clearly impossible to convict a cop in this country of that. So the law needs to be changed. The training needs to be changed. That whole interaction needs to start from a different place. And then, only then, I think maybe we see a reduction in these awful situations.
I think that you make a really great point there. And, you know, one thing that I want to add is, look, yes, the onus is on police departments throughout the country, but I also, I want to address something else that keeps coming up with these stories that I think is problematic, right? And it's, you know, society's reaction to it. And this comfort that people have with demonizing innocent individuals who have been shot and killed by cops, right? And so something interesting came across on social media yesterday that I wanted to just quickly draw attention to. There was a black activist who posted something about Otto Warmbier. He was the 22-year-old who was detained in North Korea. He was sent back and he was suffering from a coma when he was sent back. And unfortunately, tragically, he was pronounced dead yesterday. Now, the black activist wrote about it on social media and said something about how, well, he shouldn't have done, you know, any criminal activity in North Korea. I mean, taking down that banner was criminal activity. So essentially antagonizing Warmbier for his actions in North Korea, but it wasn't meant seriously. It was meant to draw similarities or comparisons between the way, you know, white people are unjustly murdered and how black people are unjustly murdered. When it comes to black individuals, for some reason, people feel absolutely no problem demonizing them, picking them apart, assuming that they're thugs, talking about, you know, the amount of marijuana in their system. By the way, guess who smokes marijuana? Pretty much everyone. That doesn't give cops or anyone else the ability to run around shooting people because they might have marijuana in their system, right? But we have no problem demonizing certain groups of people who have been shot and killed. But if someone posts something about Otto Warmbier, who's a 22-year-old white guy who, by the way, tragically was murdered and should not have died, and no one should ever make excuses for any type of murder, right? But if anyone makes the same type of argument about Otto, well, then people are up in arms and they're angry about it, right? And that individual got criticized quite a bit for posting that, but he was making a political point.
And right, and they and people should get mad at that.
Yeah.
Abstractly, you know, not given. I didn't get that guy's point at all, but I just read it and I was like, oh, well, you got yourself in trouble for that.
Right.
But I didn't get it. You're right. I'm glad you pointed that out because we do it all the time. We did it with Mike Brown. People try, but here's the deal. Good luck doing it with Philando Castile.
Right.
He did every goddamn thing right, everything right. He let the police know there was a gun in the car that he was legally allowed to carry. This was a guy, by the way, and Philando Castile, tragically, I think this is right, I hope this is right. I've certainly read it on social media and I think read it at the time of his killing. He was a professional get stopped by police while driving. He'd been stopped more than 40 times. The number 46 is what's right in my head. 46 times that guy had been pulled over by police. 46 times,
I know.
Right? Either he's the worst driver in the history of Minnesota, or that guy just gets pulled over a lot because he's black. So he knew how to get pulled over. He was careful. His girlfriend's 4-year-old kid was in the car. He handed over the insurance. He didn't have the license right away. He warned the cop about the gun, and damn it, the guy still got it. It's terrible. It's hideous. It's not about whether but I don't have the standing for it, so I get it. You're outraged about the conviction or the lack of conviction. You have every right to be. But to me, the point is we have got to change the training and the system and the law immediately, right now, so that there are 10 of these a year and not 900 of these a year.
It's more than that, though. I mean, like Anna said, that's so well-intentioned and so right to do, but if we as a society just look at people and just are so quick to throw, oh, well, they're bad, they've done bad things, they're criminals, that's a problem with us. That's more
a
than
lack
that.
Of empathy.
We have to, I mean, when we look at Black Lives Matter and people go, oh, that's a hate group, oh, it's terrible. All they're saying is, we're human, stop killing us, we bleed, we're just like you, stop pretending we don't matter.
Right. All right, one other update on a story with a similar theme. Yesterday, we reported on a 30-year-old woman by the name of Charlena Lyles, who had a mental illness and unfortunately called police officials in regard to a burglary and then was shot by the two Seattle cops who showed up to the scene. Now, when cops arrived to the scene, they alleged that she was holding a knife and they felt threatened, and that's why they decided to shoot her.
I think I think she didn't have the knife when they got there.
They didn't.
She went and got the knife.
Yeah. So Yes, and we're going to get to that in just a second, because the Seattle Police Department, in an effort to be transparent about this case, has released audio of the situation, and it gives you a sense of what that scene was like. Now, just to give you some more context before we go to the audio, the recording captured by microphones linked wirelessly to the dashboard video system in the officer's patrol car was publicly released in the interest of maintaining transparency in the investigation of Sunday's shooting. And that's according to a statement by the Seattle Police Department. Keep in mind that Lyles had four children and was expecting a fifth, meaning that she was pregnant at the time of the shooting. And unfortunately, again, she did lose her life. Now, the full audio is a little over 4 minutes long. Obviously, we can't play the full thing for you, but I do highly recommend you listen to the full audio. We will include a link in the description box below. But the Seattle Police Department, in the statement posted on its website along with audio recording, said that two officers were sent on Sunday to respond to a report of a burglary instead of the typical one because of a recent officer safety caution associated with the caller. So why am I mentioning that? Well, before this encounter with the cops, she had another encounter with cops where she had a little bit of an episode. She became paranoid. She had a pair of scissors in her hands. She accused these cops of being part of the KKK and coming after her. So clearly, there's some sort of mental condition going on. And the police department was aware of that. And the responding police officials were also aware of that. In fact, in the audio, they're heard as saying, she let them in, then she started talking all crazy about how the officers weren't going to leave. This gal, she is the one making all these weird statements about how her and her daughter are going to turn into wolves. So that was said in the audio by the two cops that were involved in this shooting. So the reason why I'm mentioning that is because they were aware that she had some sort of mental condition. Now, with that said, here is the part of the audio where the shooting happened.
They said an Xbox was taken.
Yeah.
Now what was the defective in that?
So obviously there's no video to accompany that audio, but that's what we have right now. I don't know what kind of training there is with this police department and those who have mental conditions, but police have said that both officers were equipped with less lethal force options. And unfortunately, it ended with them using fatal force and killing her.
They knew she had a mental health condition.
They did, yes.
You showed us that. It just seemed like it was meant to be more derisive than, oh, this is a clue we should follow. Perhaps it should be handled differently.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. It's, you know, I am, again, keenly aware these are two police officers who are confronted with a person with a knife. So I am, you know, they're either not going to get charged, or if they do get charged, they're going to get acquitted. And I know when I've read stories about how quickly someone can cover a lot of ground with a knife, and I find it hard to believe that two police officers couldn't disable the knife. I don't know. I'm not a cop, so, and I know cops are going to roll their eyes, and so I don't know, and I wasn't there, and we need more information, and everybody should probably shut up until we have more information. But I still don't understand. I know that when you're trained as a police officer in the United States of America, and I think in every single jurisdiction, that if you use lethal force, you're supposed to use lethal force to kill.
Right.
Right? You're never supposed to shoot anybody in the leg, especially if somebody has a gun, because if you shoot them in the leg, they can still shoot you with their gun. That has translated over to knives also. You know, logic tells me that, why? Mm-hmm. I understand, by the way, you could shoot somebody in the leg and still kill them. Mm-hmm. I got it, but not usually. So again, it goes back to, are we sure we're doing everything right? Are we 100% positive that police training in the year 2017 for handling people at their worst moments Are we positive we're doing it the right way? If we're positive we're doing it the right way, if we, as President Obama said he was going to do, if we were going to put the best policing minds involved with people involved in at-risk communities and put them together and the smartest people and talked it out about the best way to handle it, if we came out with the exact same solution, okay. But I bet we aren't handling right. it in the best way. I bet there are different ways to handle it that would reduce these things happening, because it's not just her family now that and the kids, the three kids who are in the goddamn house, man. It's not just those that her life's over and her family's life has changed and those kids' lives, and she was pregnant.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not just that that's ruined. It has a damaging effect on the psyche in Seattle mm-hmm. and in the state of Washington and for all of us to get this again and again and again and to suddenly start feeling like, hey, maybe I was taught to believe police, they came to our school, they're the good guys, right? There's damage to our collective psyche when we stop thinking that. And for some, that happened a long time ago and they're not the good guys. And I totally get, man, if you, I have enormous privilege as a white male to where anytime a cop has asked me to do anything, I do it. And I've never had a fear in my life. And my run-ins with police have been negligible, if mm-hmm. I've had any. I can't even remember, maybe one. And getting pulled over, that's it. And it's like, we're joking at the end, right? Mm-hmm. You know? But it has a collective effect on all our psyches, and it has on black people since the 18th century. So it's possible we're doing it wrong. It is possible that it's okay to try and shoot somebody in the leg who has a knife and you think is a risk, because they're not gonna kill you with the knife if you shoot him in the leg, and she'd be alive today. And I don't know, and I'm not an authority, but man, I want authorities to get together and I want that conversation broached, because the immediate response to it is always, no, if you draw your weapon and if you think a circumstance is serious enough to discharge your weapon, then you discharge your weapon to kill.
Yeah, and look, it's, I think that in order to stop the types of stories that we're seeing far too often, there needs to be a comprehensive approach, right? Because right now in society, we have a dangerous cocktail that leads to these types of encounters with cops. First of all, you know, we have issues with healthcare in general, but mental health care? I mean, just living in Los Angeles, and of course this is anecdotal evidence, but I know that on a broader level, this is a big issue. There are people who are living in the streets because of the fact that they have untreated mental conditions, and you see it day in and day out, you know? And people can't afford to take care of themselves physically right now. And mental health care is never a priority in the United States until there's a mass shooting and people are looking for a scapegoat so we don't have to talk about gun legislation, right? But mental health care is something that we 100% have to address in the country, and we don't. So we don't address mental health care, people go untreated, okay? We have an issue with, you know, cops who are justified in being paranoid because we're swimming in a sea of guns, right? And then on top of that, there is a lack of training in terms of dealing with individuals who have mental health issues. And so this cocktail leads to these types of stories that we see day in and day out. And there are stories that we don't even report on, because it would literally be the only thing that we talk about on this show if we were to report on every single one of them. I mean, I don't know if there's ever gonna be a solution. I mean, I know there are solutions. I know that they're not actually taken seriously. Instead of, you know, getting defensive, I don't know. I feel like it would be more helpful if people consider possible solutions and actually work toward, you know, improving the conditions that Americans are living under. But it doesn't seem like that's the case. There's just this ridiculous, weird pushback, as if every single cop is perfect and they do their jobs perfectly 100% of the time. No other profession, you know, gets that type of, you know, treatment. But for some reason with cops, it's like, no, you're not allowed to criticize them. They have hard jobs, so they get to go ahead and shoot anyone they want, and they can't get criticized for it.
Alonzo Bowden was here on Friday, and he just said, we pay him more and you make him go to college. And I've thought that for a long time, and I think it's just worth bringing up.
Yeah.
That it becomes a different kind of job. And I'm not saying there aren't a lot of smart cops. I know a lot. I know, not a lot, but I know some cops, and they're super smart mm-hmm. and thoughtful guys. So I'm not saying they're not now. But that would be a start. It's not, you know, it's not a job you settle in. It should be a job you aspire to. It's one of the hardest jobs in the world, and they should be paid well, and they should be given time off because it is enormously stressful because they're exposed to people at their worst every single day. Cops on the street are,
yes,
especially in cities like Los Angeles. And paying them more and having them get a college where they, as Alonzo said, where you meet and are exposed to other people, it would help. It's a different way of thinking about it. There already are jurisdictions that do that.
Yep.
The FBI does it, by the way.
All right, we have to take a break. Let's do that. And when we come back, some non-police related news, including some vulnerable voter data that was just left out in the open on the internet. I'll give you the details on that. And also what a European court is doing to go after Russia's discriminatory laws against gay people. Come right back. We'll give you that and more. Hey guys, welcome back to TYT. During the break, Ben took it upon himself to throw my husband under the bus.
The intent was to give a compliment.
That was a backhanded compliment.
I get that it didn't come out as I thought it in my head.
All right, I want to read some TYT lives. Jeremy Kohler says, that is fucking chilling. You can see even clearer that he knew he fucked up as soon as he fired, but still fired way too many times in regard to the cop who shot Philando Castile. I mean, yeah, I mean, you see the remorse immediately and he starts crying and everything and he's panicking. He acted way too quickly and he acted in a lethal way.
I think we can all acknowledge, at least we on this panel all acknowledge that he acted too quickly. I wouldn't read into his emotion, like, did that mean he thought he made a mistake?
Right, that's true. It seemed as though he was remorseful, but that's speculation,
what it means is, to me, is that, obviously, he didn't want to. Mm-hmm. Nobody who wanted to reacts like that, right? So that gets back to, how do we fix it? So no one wanted this outcome. How do we fix it so this outcome doesn't happen?
Vanilla Zeese says, I wonder if the pro-lifers will get on this. I'm sure you're talking about the Lyle story. Right. They aborted her baby too. Yeah, it's weird. Whenever there is injustice involving a black woman who's pregnant, pro-lifers don't really come out and make any type of comment about it. Of course, there was the story of a woman who went into labor in Milwaukee in an institution under Sheriff Clark, right, under his watch. And when she went into labor, she was denied any type of care or treatment. And as a result, her unborn baby didn't make it. So I don't know. I didn't see a lot of conservatives coming up and showing that they're up in arms about that situation. Anyway, let's move on to other news. A Republican contractor's database of nearly 200 million voters from all walks of life and all political ideologies is under fire because it turns out that their database was left exposed on the internet for a whopping 12 days. Now we know this thanks to a cybersecurity researcher by the name of Chris Vickery. And he does research to see what type of vulnerabilities there are out there in regard to private information of private citizens. And he came across this detailed information of nearly every single US voter. Now, detailed information of nearly every US voter, including in some cases their ethnicity, religion, and views on political issues, was left exposed online for 2 weeks by a political consultancy that works for the RNC, Republican National Committee, and other GOP clients. Now, the group that has been contracted by the RNC is named Deep Root Analytics, and they claim that they haven't been hacked. This wasn't the result of a hack, but that certain terms by their providers changed. And as a result, they didn't realize that there needed to be some extra steps taken to protect the data of these individuals. Now, thankfully, Kim Horcher's here and she's more of an expert on this type of tech related news. But let me give you a few more details and I want you to jump in, Kim. Now, included were voters. I'm sorry, included which voters are suspicious of Wall Street and pharmaceutical firms or who reluctantly voted for Hillary Clinton or supports the Affordable Care Act. So this part is relevant because this isn't just private citizens. Obviously, this is voter information that also includes public figures, politicians, and so there might be some Republicans in Congress who might have reluctantly voted for Hillary Clinton. Like, obviously, this is incredibly private information for a lot of people, and to know that it was just just out there, vulnerable for anyone, is concerning.
A lot of that information is technically public record, besides the who reluctantly voted for Hillary Clinton, who is an opponent of the Affordable Care Act, whatever, like things like name, where you live, what your party is, blah, blah, blah. This isn't the first time Vickery has done this. Mm-hmm. Earlier this year, he found 87 million Mexican voter records on an exposed database. And then later he found, or before he found, several US voter databases online totaling 18 million voters and the state of Louisiana's entire database of 2.9 million voters. Now, we have this company here kind of blaming a third party, and that, in my experience, seems to almost always be the case, where this has been, this very sensitive and very important data has been put in the hands of someone else who is in some way vulnerable or some way exposes whatever the information is. This is how things get exposed in the Internet of Things quite often. And I also think this is kind of symptomatic of, as a society, we've kind of been taught to stop caring about our own data privacy.
Right.
And, you know, we get like asked by certain websites to share all of our Facebook info or share all of our contact info, or all of it's posted out there, and we think, oh, it's fine, it's okay. But it's not okay. You have to stop being willing to wholesale give up all of your privacy, all of your data, because that will be used against you one day.
Well,
or
what do you
sold.
Do? Okay, so here's my question. In response to that, though, what do you do when you want to register to vote? I mean, you have to use your address, and to know that, you know, look, there are people who go to extreme lengths to keep their address private, right? And like, what do those people do if they come across stories like this and they want to vote, they want to be part of this democratic process, right? But they also want to maintain their privacy, especially where they live or which issues matter to them. Maybe they don't want their, you know, political ideology to be out there available for the world to see. You know what I'm saying?
We need to do better with our state and federal security measures. I mean, in the last election, we found some of the voting machines were over 10 years old or running on software that had like Windows 98 involved. Wow. We have to be better about that. We have to value our privacy more. And I think this is, I mean, I see these stories, not this extreme, but I see them all the time. And like you said, people who do want to vote and do want to be part of the democratic process, but don't want their stuff shown, that's perfectly fair. And I know while this is publicly available information, it's all together, it's all easy to read. I hope this was also a database, not a bunch of spreadsheets like I read. But yeah, it should be worrisome.
Yeah, and by the way, not all of the information that was in this database was publicly available.
No, yeah. Just some of it was
just
publicly
some of
available.
It, yes.
And still, you don't want it all organized like that.
Right.
I hope this does a little further damage to the argument that the only reason that the DNC was hacked in the 2016 election was because the DNC has porous internet security. They may well have incredibly porous internet security, but the RNC wasn't hacked because nobody wanted to hack them.
That's it was all. Just there.
It is not because the RNC has such tight cybersecurity that the Russians tried, but they couldn't. Just couldn't get it done.
Yeah. You know, another thing that I thought was a little concerning, and look, political parties are going to want to collect as much information on American voters as possible so they can, you know, calibrate their campaigns in a way that appeal to the most voters as possible. I mean, that's common sense. But they're collecting a ton of information on you and storing it, including, you know, how are you likely to feel about pharmaceutical companies? How are you likely to feel about Wall Street, major corporations? This is all stuff that they keep about every single voter. So the company also kept information on Americans' voting histories and their reported enthusiasm for Trump. Nearly 170 gigabytes of the exposed data consisted of social media posts scrapped from Reddit, which is amazing. And so look, your participation on Reddit or social media is obviously going to be public. And if there are political parties who want to collect that data for their own benefit, of course they're going to do it. Also, the exposure began on June 1st when Deep Root Analytics adopted updates that accidentally stripped away the password protection on the files. By the way, this isn't something that's unique to a political party or politics in general. This is something that we see over and over again with you know, healthcare providers getting hacked. This stuff happens all the time. And so I think there needs to be a general awareness of it. There needs to be measures taken to protect people's privacy. I can't even tell you how many times I've had to like call my credit card company and be like, yo, didn't spend $800 at whatever restaurant last night. Like, that's insane. And later on, I'll find out that there was a breach for one of the websites where my credit card information is stored. So that kind of stuff happens on a regular basis. There needs to be more emphasis on protecting our privacy and making sure that hackers can't get to our information, and that, as in this case, our information isn't just readily available for anyone who wants it.
I think I speak for Anna when I say, thank God Kim was here for this story.
What? Yeah. I know stuff.
No, you know, okay, fine. She probably, well, I would have helped you not at all. So you would have had to do the story on your own.
It's okay.
You at least had someone who understood what you were talking
about.
I'm
not helpful in other stories, so it works out.
Man, Ben is just like in the process of throwing everyone under the bus today.
Jesus. I mean, here's what Anna really thinks. Thank God your boyfriend wasn't here, because he's incompetent about everything.
No.
Yeah.
First of all, husband. Jesus Christ. What's wrong with me?
All right.
Well, then in that case, thank God your boyfriend wasn't here, because your husband might be watching.
That's true.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. A European court has gone after discriminatory policies against the gay community in Russia. This is known as the gay propaganda law in Russia, which was passed back in 2013. And certain individuals have come to the European court arguing that this anti-gay propaganda legislation, or law I should say, is essentially against certain articles in this European Court of Human Rights. So let me give you the details. The European Court of Human Rights ruled against a Russian law barring the promotion of gay propaganda among minors, which the court labeled discriminatory and encouraging of homophobia. By adopting such laws, the authorities reinforce stigma and prejudice and encourage homophobia, which is incompatible with the notions of equality, pluralism, and tolerance inherent in a democratic society. So that was their ruling, and I should be clear that Russia is part of the European Court of Human Rights. Russia plans on appealing this decision, but the entire case really revolves around three people who brought it to court. So the law violates Article 10, which protects freedom of expression, and Article 14, which prohibits discrimination, of the European Convention on Human Rights. And so the three people who came forward with this case will be awarded $48,000 in total.
Combined, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not, look, the monetary part of this ruling isn't really that impressive, but I do think it's important that this type of law gets condemned by other countries, and that's what's happened here. What's interesting is that Russia plans on appealing it. I mean, okay, so go ahead and appeal it, but the ruling was right. I mean, it does violate those two articles that were specifically mentioned in this ruling. It does discriminate. There have been individuals who have been persecuted simply for being gay in Russia. And just take a look at what's happening in Chechnya right now, where gay men are literally being rounded up and persecuted simply for their sexual orientation. In some cases, they're just being accused of being gay. There's no evidence that they even are. It's just insane. And look, there's an interesting conversation happening in the United States where people think Russia is either black or white, right? It's either good or bad. No, there are bad components to Russia. For the liberals who continuously defend Russia and pretend as if it's like the best country in the world, really? I mean, there's a lot of strange stuff going on.
Well, Anna, this just strikes me as more pro-war McCarthyism from you.
Right, I mean, that's right. That's exactly right. Pro-war McCarthyism.
Stop beating the drums for war with Russia.
I'm just being xenophobic, you know?
Right.
No, I mean, obviously there is, I find it interesting that several years ago when we were covering the Pussy Riot story, people were outraged at the fact that three women were imprisoned for 2 years simply because they were protesting at a Catholic church. Everyone was outraged by that. And now all of a sudden, like, no, Russia's great. What's wrong with Russia? No, Russia persecutes people and immediately goes after political opponents, something that we would obviously speak out against here in the United States, something that we would condemn here in the United States. But for some reason, now all of a sudden, you know, Russia is completely innocent.
What I don't understand is that, you know, I get it. I'm sure that many people are outraged by this, but the defending Russia under, it's all under the guise that we're beating the drums for war, that it's part of the military industrial complex, which is part and parcel, works part and parcel with a media that will believe any sort of pro-war direction in a story. And it just, it's incredibly not, I mean, you know, for example, I don't want us to ever fight another war, ever. And I want us to spend less money on defense. Yes. Far less money on defense. I want us to have a strong, vigorous defense, but I want us to be reasonable, and I want our money allocated for things like infrastructure that'll create jobs and grow this country and protect the people who need protecting the most. I also think that Vladimir Putin is a crazed dictator, and we probably should be cautious about how we proceed with him. That said, when we can work together, we should, because
that's right.
That, just like when because we have for 250 years we've worked with terrible dictators. And at times people have worked with us while thinking that we behave like dictators.
We're working with terrible dictators right now as we speak. We do it all the time. I don't know, maybe I missed it, but I don't recall anyone on this network ever once advocating for any type of war with Russia. But
the only person who ever advocated for a war on this network is Cenk, and it was the first Gulf War, and he was a tool.
Right.
Right.
Was that before the network?
It was. I'm just saying that it was.
Yeah.
I was Cenk 1.0, and it was, and he held a pro-war rally at the University of Pennsylvania.
Cenk 1.0.
But since then, he's basically been against your wars.
Right.
And so is everybody else. And the notion that we can't criticize Russia without getting called by some on the left as if we're beating the drums for a new Cold War is simply preposterous.
Absolutely. Anyway, all right. I want to make sure we get to the fun story that I promised. Let's do that. There's a university in China that wants to emphasize the importance of social media and etiquette on social media. Now, of course, there is some money to be made on social media if you have a large enough following. So as a result, the Yiwu Industrial and Commercial College has created a curriculum. This is a series of classes dedicated to success on social media. So keep in mind that top earning internet celebrities known as Wang Hong in China can earn up to $46 million a year, which makes me question my life choices. I feel like I have failed. But nonetheless, students who complete 3 years of the course or courses will be awarded with an associate degree. So this is an actual curriculum. To cut it as an influencer, you will need to know, for a start, aesthetic cultivation and fashion sensitivity, public relations etiquette, and photo processing skills. So can you take a good picture? Do you know how to dress yourself? Do you know how to edit the hell out of that photo? And do you know how to be as vain as possible in order to appeal to the masses and possibly make a little bit of money? Now, they also learn important skills like dance and the arts. So I wanna give a little bit of credit for that, because it's not just like selfie classes. Here's a photo of them doing some ballet. All right,
nice.
Get it.
Mm-hmm.
One girl was quoted as saying, "I like dressing myself up really pretty and taking pictures. I feel like this major really suits me." So anyway, look, I don't want to criticize China for this, because this is something that we're seeing throughout the world. You see a lot of people who become big stars on social media. They do make a lot of money on social media, and it's essentially an easy way to make money. Fans who tune in to watch can, like, let's say you have a big following, right? And you live stream and you use your social media to live stream. Here's an example of how people make money. Fans who tune in to watch can buy them virtual gifts that can be redeemed for cash. For example, a virtual car bought by a fan could be cashed in for $20. All right, you guys jump in. We have very limited time.
This story makes me want to be buried alive. It's
yeah.
terrible. After this whole influencer craze is over, you are going to look like
gonna be over.
Such a stupid asshole with this on your resume of, oh, I have an associate degree in being an influencer. I mean, go get a marketing degree. Go get a minor in dance or art or something. Or you know what, just be a worthwhile, fun person in real life on your own. Go explore something else. This is so vain.
I have nothing to add here of substance. Except I should probably be on Instagram more, right?
You Are should, you totally.
No, barely.
First of all, you have great hair. And I feel like with that alone, you should be on Instagram. Sure. Well, you'd have a following, like Ben Mankiewicz hair.
Hashtag hot dad.
Yeah. Mankiewicz law.
So my father, had a very distinguished career. He fought in World War II and was in the Peace Corps and worked for Bobby Kennedy. He was his press secretary, ran George McGovern's campaign, president of National Public Radio, and then he was in PR. He finally made some money, starting at about age 60. And the interns or the young people at the Hill & Knowlton, the big firm he worked at, they'd come in to work, like every month there'd be a meeting. He loved meeting young people. He loved talking to young people. And he was interested in other people till the day he died. And they'd all come in and they'd inevitably ask a question and he'd answer. And then he'd ask them a question. He'd say, so what? How many of you here were communications majors or PR majors? And seven or eight would hold up their hands and go, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He goes, that's great. You wasted your education. Be a history major. Be a politics major, be a political science major, be a dance major.
Sure.
Be something you're interested in. Communication, being an influence, this is what you learn, this is what you put together from learning things about the world.
This is what you learn by simply interacting with humans, right? Like go out there and have a conversation. But I think we isolate I know that I'm guilty of this. Some people isolate themselves. All the communication they do is through digital means. And I think, the fact that you have to take classes on how to be social in a digital setting is kind of strange. But anyway, there is money to be made. I get why these kids are doing it. Do you, boo? I don't want to be too judgmental. Let's just focus on improving
society
a little bit.
My dad would also say that, do you, boo?
Yes. All right, guys. Thank you so much for watching. There will be a post-game show, so make sure you check that out. And thank you to Kim and Ben. We love you guys. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.